So today I said we talk about death.
All right,
on page 18. We are in verse 3:19. Mm-hmm. And we spoke about the first part of the verse yesterday. The death of Bechotoch HaLechem, by the sweat of your brow or your nose, you're going to eat bread. As now it says, Achucho El Vadama, until you turn to the earth. Kimimeno Lukasa, because you are taken from there. Ki Osar Atah Elafor Tashu, because you are dirt and you will return to dirt. Okay, so pleasant description of human beings. So,
this is the interpretation, but it's more accurate. The article says dust. You say dirt is the more appropriate definition.
Well, for it's dirt, yeah.
Dirt.
Yeah, not, dust is not as accurate. I think that's the proverbial from dust you come to dust you return, but it's really dirt.
Ooh.
Yeah. So.
That's worse.
Yeah, that's much worse. So the, a couple of things here, of course, there's not a lot to speak about, but first I want to talk about the word Adam and the word Adama.
What? Did you say you weren't allowed to speak about
that? I said a couple of things I want to speak about here, but first I want to speak about Adam and Adama. The word Adam is taken from the word Adama, right? Adam comes from Adama, which means dirt, ground, right? The earth, right? It was taken from earth. The Maharal says there are two. Maharal was a great 16th century Jewish thinker, wrote many, many books, and he says that the Adama is related to the word Adam, yes, and also the word Adamah. He brings it from a letter somewhere. It's spelled the same way as Adama. This is Adamah, and this is Adamah. And Adamah means I will resemble. And the way the Medrash uses it is, Adam El Yoyim, I'll be resemble the upper world, the world from, which are in the heavens, the angelic world. And that's what it says, that when God created man, he said to the kids, to the Malachim, let us create man, which reflects us, which resembles us. So there's resemblance between man and whatever, angel, God, you know, if you have that type of free will, that type of intellect, which is associated with the higher world. At the same time, though, man is taken, his physical body is taken from the Adama. So therefore, you have in the middle here, the Adam, and you can go either direction. You can either be Adama El Yonim, you can be like the upper world, or you can be like the Adama, down like the dirt down below. Now, all these words, I think have something to do with the word God. I'm not 100% sure about that, but the word dam, of course, means blood, right? And I think, I don't know which word came first. If blood came first, or dirt came first, or resentment came first. But it seems like there's something there which has to do with life force, right? The life force of a human being is this blood, not just a human being, an animal. It says you're not allowed to, the Torah says you're not allowed to drink blood of an animal. Right? Because every soul, including animal souls, are in the blood. Right? You're not supposed to eat the soul together with the flesh. It's a fascinating idea the Pasuk is saying. Pasuk is saying, if you were to consume the blood of an animal, then the blood of an animal is considered to consume a soul. It's not right. You shouldn't eat souls. You should only eat meat. So therefore, you only eat the animal's flesh, you don't drink the animal's blood, okay? So the said, it seems like blood is a life force in every being. Now, the question is why one is allowed to drink fish blood. I don't know exactly, but it is permitted to drink fish blood if you're looking for some blood to drink. The thing is that...
There should be a customer on the forum.
What?
Another custom, it was a custom during torrent time to drink a glass of fish blood, but in the halakha was that you had to have the fish skin on the
table. Yeah, you had to fix the red right there. I didn't know this was a custom to do the torrent time. I thought putting to drink alcoholic beverages, not that. Not fish blood. Okay. But anyway, maybe the blood and fish fulfills a different role. I don't know, because the blood in a human being or in an animal circulates oxygen. So I don't know what blood does in a fish. Maybe it has some sort of different role. Obviously, nobody here knows the biology of fish. Okay. But in any event, the word dam therefore connotes the life force. And obviously, dam is in Adam. And obviously, blood is also in Adamet, because the life force within an individual, the nefesh, which is associated physically with blood, is what gives an individual the capacity to go up and raise himself to higher levels of spirituality. Now, I don't know why Adama is called blood, but Adama, earth, has blood within it. But my theory is, although this is a little bit weak, my theory is that since earth has a reddish tint to it, and blood is red, so therefore there is this connection between blood and earth. Again, I don't know which came first, if I'm right even, whether blood came first and therefore the earth, which is like a bloody color, is called red, or whether the earth was called Adama first and blood, which is also red, was called blood as a result. I don't know. And I might be completely wrong, of course. But the other thing which I want to mention in this regard is, of course, that the idea of dam associated with Adameh clearly indicates that this is associated with the way God said, Nivra Adam, let's create man, v'talmenu, in our reflecting us, kit musay, right? That he will resemble us. So somehow or another, in giving human beings this, and giving human beings their circulatory system, Hashem actually gave them something which makes them similar, again, I don't know how, something which makes them similar to the higher world. So, after all said and done, were Adam HaRishon not to have, Adam HaRishon could have had been like this? Or could have been like this? What I mean? This is the heaven. And this is the earth. So, he has a soul which comes from the heavens, right? And he has a body which comes from earth, right? So there were two trajectories that Adam HaRishon could have followed, right? He could have followed the trajectory of soul to soul, coming in the middle into contact with earth, or he could have followed the trajectory of earth to earth, and coming into contact in the middle with soul. Now both are true, right? Man begins with these two separate elements, which are soul and body, and it's astonishing that they're actually able to go together. In fact, the Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch says that when we say the Asher Yotzer, the bracha you say after going to the bathroom, the bracha ends, Lofecho ko basor umatzvi ratov. God heals our flesh and he does wonders. And what is the wonder which he does, or he does things wondrously? That he actually was able to connect the soul and the body, even though they are completely antithetical, right? The soul is from the higher realm, the body is from the lower realm, they're nevertheless, they're connected. That's a power. That's an extraordinary thing. So now this is, you start with soul and earth, which are two separate things, and in the middle they combine. You have soul and earth together, right? Which is the human being after he's born, at least we're going back to Adam HaRishon, so it's easier to deal with him. First there was dirt, and then there was a soul, and they combine together to make man, right? So he actually, if he had followed the right trajectory, so his earthly manner would be pulled up towards the source of his soul, which means that he actually would be able to infuse his physical body with the immortality of his soul. But what happened is, of course, he went in the other direction, right? He dragged his soul down towards his physical body. So therefore, since that is the case, the soul goes down with the body, so to speak, down to earth, and only after death can the soul then separate from the body and go back to where it came from. This is not the way it's supposed to be. In fact, as we know, one of the primary tenets of Judaism is the resurrection. that eventually souls and bodies will be reunited after death, and they will come to a state where actually the soul does impact on the body and uplift the body. But in this world, since man made the choice that he made, so therefore it's the body which drags down the soul and not the soul which uplifts the body. There are, of course, two exceptions at least to that rule, which well, there are more actually, but two exceptions are Eliyahu and Hanoch, who are coming down here in his commentary, who are said to have gone to heaven while they were still alive, right? There also are several other cases like that where we see that there are people who are able, even after their death, to have some sort of physical presence in this world. We've taken a long time to discuss it, I don't want to do that. But it says that the Chazal say about Yaakov, you know, that he didn't die, which is not to take literally because they buried him, right? But it means that he has still, if he wants to, he can come down in the bodies of this world. And the same thing it says about Rabbi Yudanov actually says the same thing. As I mentioned here, I think it was a few weeks ago, Yudanov used to come back to his house every Friday night to make kiddush after he died. Until the neighbors found out about him, he decided he's not going to do it anymore. So the idea is that there is some way, even for us in, not college, even for people who live in this world after the sin, to make their bodies so holy that they are governed by their soul, and they are therefore therefore transcend death, and so to speak, available to them even after they have died. But for most people, obviously, since their body dragged down the soul to such an extent, they got to separate their souls from the body. And otherwise, the soul would always remain impure. So therefore, there's a process, which he said, which Hashem talks about here. He says, you know what? You have to return to the ground. He may meddle the cup because that's where you take it from. Now, the question is, of course, okay, so this is the trajectory. It goes from earth back to earth, even though there's a soul in the middle, it has to be separated in the end because you dragged it down too far. But why do you think the pasuk changes here from Adama to Ofer? First, you see this change here? It says, until you return to the ground from which you were taken, for you are dust or dirt, and shall to dust you shall return. Why did you say the pasuk would have been more consistent if it said, "Atshuva elo afar ki afar atav elo afar tashuv, atshuva la dal dama ki min ha dama atav elo ha dama tashuv"?
Is the reason because it's taken from the earth? I think the earth is where everything starts. And Afar is where everything finishes. Everything we're doing to dust. And it's also to mean that Afar, because it's dust, it's saying that you're nothing more but dust.
Well, yeah, but it says you start in the dust. It doesn't say you start in the ground. It says Afar Atah, you are... Oh, I see what you're saying. Afar Atah means you didn't come from dust, but rather you are dust. Aha. Okay, so what do you want to say from that? It's interesting, I didn't realize that. You're right. It doesn't say that you came from dirt, but it says you are dirt.
That's
interesting. I never thought of that. In other words, Hashem is insulting him, basically, saying you are a piece of dirt. He's saying you are taken from the ground, and you remain a piece of dirt, right? That you are. So
I didn't mean it that way. I meant it in the way that it's from the earth. And the earth is that everything sprouts on. And then everything comes and starts on the earth, which is something that fills up from the earth. And dust is where everything ends up as. So everything will eventually end up as
nothing. Yeah, but it says now you're dust. But why does it say two separate phrases? Now you are dust and you return to dust.
Because dust is not to make him known that because he is dust, it's like a... What's the word?
Humble.
Exactly. Thank you.
Precisely to humility.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say.
Uh-huh. So we say that when Hashem says to him, upper Atta means that you should not have had the aspirations to be like God, right?
Mm.
Like the Nachash wanted you to do,
exactly.
Because humility is what properly suits you. Okay, not bad. Yeah.
I think that when you
say
ground, you mean growth. From ground to growth, and therefore it has the potential for birth and for growth. But from that, there's no growth. So it seems to me that
it will be very good, but the article translation is no good.
Oh, no?
It's not really dust, it's dirt.
Oh,
Well,
you grow stuff in dirt.
What do you grow?
Plants.
Dirt? What do you mean by dirt? I don't know, maybe I don't know the perfect definition.
Brown, dirty stuff. And you grow dirt.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
You're right that also dust, you can't, but really dust in Hebrew, the proper word for dust is avak, aleph beis kuf, right? Mm. The avak is dust, right? But afar is dirt. So I don't know why the article translated afar as dust, but it's a mistranslation. It means dirt.
Is there any difference between dirt and soil?
I don't think in Hebrew there is a difference. I think they're both the same. Yeah.
So why wouldn't you say soil instead of dirt?
How can
the soil
then
return to soil?
Well, I think dirt is more, more figurative. I don't know. You're right. I could think soil. Make it feel better to say when I say soil, it could be soil. Okay, but the idea is basically the same.
What saw?
What?
Not soil. Soil has saw. Some saw our hand.
No, that's excrement.
No.
That's I don't know. I didn't know that soil in English meant excrement.
My point was, is God really saying, is God really attempting to insult him here by saying, you come from dirt, I'm returning you to dirt?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. That was the Jonathan's idea. It wasn't my interpretation. That's what he was saying, right? So you're right. It might not mean that.
Okay.
You were creating. He talked to him as he can understand, as I can understand. To you, it will appear to you that you are nothing but physical. That's why I think you are there, not you come from. You are there in the sense that the way you're going to look at yourself, if you don't get this whole thing right, is that you are there, you're nothing but come from physical.
So what you mean, similar to what he said, no, he said, in other words, you will see yourself as dirt unless you
understand what the next phrase is going to say, that the gospels and all that other stuff. You will perceive yourself as dirt.
Where do you get that? That's not over here, though.
No.
The gospels aren't over here. It's back in the earlier verse.
Okay, what words are used when God's creating man out of? Does he say, I'm creating out of the dirt?
Is that
the word that's used?
Let's look. No, I don't think so. Let's look. And not Chumash itself. Is Chumash itself... Oh, yeah, it does. Actually, sorry. On page 10. Page 10, plus of Zion, verse 7. Vayitzer Shemokim to Adam, God formed the man, Afar min ha'adama. Again, the article goes, must have dirt from the ground. So God took dirt from the ground and formed man. Formed man. Do you see that? Verse 7. Page 11.
I thought it meant shaped man.
God formed man dust from the ground, but you're saying it's a dirt from the
ground. Yeah, same word in Hebrew, afar.
Okay. Now, two lines previously, they said, God had not said right upon the earth and there was no man to work the soil. What word is used for soil?
Adama.
And what word is used for dirt?
Afar. Adama, the article is translated one place as soil, and the other place as
earth,
as ground.
It's using the same word. It uses different English words, but it's the same Hebrew word.
Yeah.
And that's the same Hebrew word that's used, that's the, where you are. Dirt and to dirt you shall return? No.
It's the same word used here for the from the ground. In verse here in Pasuk Yutet, in verse 19 on page 18, the word ground in Hebrew is adama, and back on page 10 or page 11, the word for ground is also adama, but the article uses here the word soil also as an alternative translation for adama.
My question is the Hebrew. When God is creating man, the Hebrew word is adama, right?
Both. Afar min ha'adama. Dirt from the ground.
Okay, or soil from the ground.
Or soil from the ground, right.
And the same words are used. And what's the word that's used when he says you're going to return to?
To dirt. To soil.
To soil. So it's the same word that's used in the beginning and at the end. All
No, it's not necessarily the goat. That was turned to the goat. It was like the goat. It's not necessarily true just because he said it. But no, you can explain it differently. It's just that's one way of explaining it. So before we go on to see what the Malbim says on the pasuk, just another interesting thing. And these couple of psukim, which we just saw, or this verse, which we just saw, it doesn't say anything about you're going to die. So it doesn't say you're going to die. Why can't God just say, you're going to die? Right? He said already before, you know, we said, don't eat from it, because on the day you eat from it,
you shall surely die.
You shall surely die. Where was that? On page 12. Page 12, page 13, you have at the end of Pasuk Zion 17, for on the day you eat of it, you shall surely die. So, you know, why does God not say, and now you ate of it, you are subject to death? Rather, he says, he focuses on the fact that you're from the ground, you're from soil or dirt, and you're going back, you are dirt or soil, you're going back to dirt or soil. Why doesn't he actually focus on death? Right? Why is death not the issue here? Why is all this dirt going on?
Because well, Adam had no awareness what soil or what death was.
Is that true? Then what did God tell him beforehand? When God comes and says, don't eat the tree, because then you're going to die. Mm-hmm. So, Adam didn't understand. Adam, he had to understand what that meant.
He might have known what death was, but he means how come to be aware of the consequences of dying? I mean, he didn't have any experience with that.
So what is Hashem warning him about?
I don't know, but how
does he know what you get allowed?
How do you know what that is? Yeah, exactly. I mean, he never
experienced
that. He never experienced anything existing and then not being
anything. Right, we assume that somehow that knowledge was there because, you know, I mean, look, Adam HaRishon was, so to speak, born. He was created as a functioning adult, right? So there must have been certain things which were certain pieces of education which were put into his, you know, implanted into his brain. But imagine somehow, I don't know how, you're right, but imagine somehow death was somehow put into this.
Yeah, I understand, but I mean, the
concept
of it, I think
we can only... Well, let's talk about it. Someone said, you're going to die. Someone says, what's death? So he says, eat and you'll find out. But if I'm going to go...
Yeah,
it's a bad thing.
I mean, right. I think that, I mean, I'm not sure about death, for example, happiness. Happiness is something that you come to understand, either by knowing someone who is happy or feeling yourself. But death is something different, because you cannot feel it yourself. Because the moment you feel yourself, you cannot experience it anymore. So the only way to experience that is by looking at someone else dying.
I know what you're saying. I'm not denying that you have a good question. But I don't think the answer is that when God warned him, Adam had no clue what he was being warned about.
No, you're saying,
did God really back up his warning? Here he's saying that you must not eat thereof, for on the day you eat of it, you shall surely die.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that seems to say that when you eat the apple, you're going to drop dead right then.
It wasn't an apple.
Well, whatever it is.
Whatever,
yeah. Okay. Well, but the threat seems to be when you eat the fruit, on the day you eat it, you shall surely die.
Right.
So why are we talking about death in the future? Why didn't he keep the promise and have him drop dead right on the spot?
Okay, the Malbim speaks about that. I'm not sure I like his answer, but what the Malbim says is that after, it wasn't that he was going to drop dead immediately. So on that day, right, I'm going to come down, I'm going to zap you, right? So that when you eat from the tree, I'm going to come down and kill you. So there wasn't that was poison, as Chava seems, as the woman seems to understand it, but rather the ramification of having eaten from it will be that you will die. Okay. So, but the Rambam says that between the time that Hashem came to judge him and the time that he would have been killed, he did tshuva. Now he didn't do complete tshuva, obviously, because had he done complete tshuva, so then it wouldn't have been punished altogether. But somehow, whatever tshuva he did, this is something we're going to have to discuss. Somehow, whatever tshuva he did was saved him from immediate death. It pushed off the penalty for whatever, 930 years. But it didn't actually save him completely. On the other hand, right, it wasn't, it was able to push it off. So it was some sort of middle ground of tshuva, which actually help to a certain extent, but didn't help completely. That's what the Malvin says. But that's not the customary answer. The customary answer is going to be your question is actually that on the day, when he says on the day you will die, not that you're going to die then. That wasn't even part of the original warning. What he meant to say, what Hashem meant to say, is on the day you eat from it, you will become then a mortal human being. Instead of being immortal, right, with the capacity to live forever, you will become mortal. And not that you're going to die that day, but then you will be subject to death. That's what it seems according to the Chazal. But the rabbi says it seems to be the conventional understanding of that verse. Okay? So again, according to Malbim, he really should have died that day, but he did choose some form of tshuva. According to the other understanding, the initial warning was not he was going to die that day, but rather from that day on he would become mortal. Okay? So those are that verse. So let's go back to this verse over here. Let me tell you what the Malbim says about it, and we'll see what else we can understand. He says, you're going to return to the ground. It says, what does that mean? So he says, you're not going to, the divine soul will not be able to separate itself from the body until the day of death, when the dirt or soil will return to the ground and the spirit will return to God. And that means when you are, when it says that Shukha El Hadama, when you return to the ground, when you are buried. Shukha El Hadama, return to the ground means when you are buried at your death, that's when your soul will separate, right? But then besides that, after burial, what happens to the body afterwards?
Rot.
It rots, right? It rots and becomes dirt, right? So therefore, what happens afterwards, when the body rots, and breaks apart, and the part of the dirt, so to speak, goes back to the dirt. So this means that the full rectification of man's sin occurs. In other words, it doesn't occur. And that's why in Judaism, of course, we're very meticulous in burying bodies so that they rot. We don't cremate, and we don't do other things which prevent bodies from rotting.
Because
rotting is part and parcel of the rectification of man. We don't cremate, we don't embalm, anything else which prevents rotting is not considered to be in accordance with Jewish law. We'll get to it in a second. So then so what he's saying is that when it says Shukha Adama, that's one stage, right? When you return to the ground, then actually you are going to cease. If you look at the process, the way it's constructed, actually, when you return to the ground, you're going to cease working. In other words, you're going to have to work by the sweat of your brow to make bread until you die. When you're buried, then you stop working, right? But even after you stop working, when you're dead, when you're inert, it's still not a full completion of the atonement, the rectification which you have to undergo. What you have to undergo is because you, obviously, the part of you which comes from the dirt, it's a little bit like Jonathan, the part of you which comes from the dirt is what caused you to be drawn in the wrong direction. So therefore, that part of the body has to disintegrate before you are, in fact, completely rectified. So that's why also the rabbis say, of course, that when the body is rot, that's an inherent component of the atonement for a person's sin, whatever those sins might be. Now, he does say, there are tzaddikim who in the course of history we know that their bodies did not rot. So the rabbis tell us about cases in the case of Shimon ben Elazar and the other cases of that sort. So he says, the Malbim says, there are tzaddikim, there are righteous people who are not eaten by the worm and turned into dirt, and Adam himself. The Gemara Bava Basra says that when the Rabbi Benoah, who was going to check out the gravesite, went into the Maharet HaMakpela, where Adam was buried, he saw that Adam didn't rot. His body was fully intact. Right? So ironic, because it says here that man, Adam himself, was taken from the dirt and returned to the dirt. So he says that even then, the Gemara says in Shabbos that before Kriyas HaMetim, before the resurrection occurs, everybody has to turn to dirt. That's why the thought. So if you're able to survive till Mashiach comes, don't worry. Sooner or later you're going to die anyway. Because everybody has to die at some point in order for the body to undergo that disintegrating process. Now, so that, you know...
Yeah. So if somebody, let's say, is cremated, then that means that they're never going to be able to fully atone for their sins? Or their neshamas will never be properly cleansed?
Not in that way. There are other ways, God has, there are other ways in which these things can be accomplished. And, you know, maybe for a few days. There are other punishments which are described in the Svarim. So there could be that one of the other punishments covers it. But certainly what is the preferred way, I should say, to do it by the body disintegrating.
Okay, so is that the primary reason, though, that Jewish law forbids cremation?
Well, there are two aspects to it. One is the respect for the dead body, right? So the respect for the dead body is that you should not cremate it because that's not respectful. But on the other hand, you know, then embalm it, right? So it'll last forever. No, that's also not good because the body has to be allowed to rot. That is, in fact, one of the reasons why we bury in simple wooden, in wooden coffins, I should say. Wooden coffins because the wood enables the rot to, enables the rot, facilitates the rot, and it enables the body to disintegrate that much quicker. And in fact, in Israel, they don't even bury in coffins at all, right? They bury just in the tower because, you know, the quicker the process occurs, the better it is for the human being.
Okay, well, why is it better for the human being?
It's because, again, it seems like this atonement is actually part of it, since it's so essential. Let's talk about this atonement for a minute. You know that Judaism is opposed to autopsies, right? Mm-hmm. And we are except under extenuating circumstances. And the reason we're opposed to autopsies is because the Gemara says that kosher machak kosher rima b'toleh b'bosar amit k'macha b'bosar chai. It says that when the worms start gnawing at your body after death, so it's painful to you as if somebody while you're alive started sticking needles into you. Now, Chasam Sofer says, it doesn't make any sense. One has one's nervous system is not functioning after one dies. So how is one supposed to feel pain? So the Chasam Sofer says you don't feel physical pain. But rather, it is, remember we said a few days ago, or several times we said, that Gehenim, hell, is a sense of terrible shame and degradation. But since shame and degradation is kind of an abstract concept, so the rabbi said, it's hot and it burns, right? It's like fire. So the same thing, when the soul perceives the body in which it was functioning, rotting, or being, that, you know, mutilated, right, in the course of some autopsy or whatever else, so it feels a terrible sense of shame and degradation. It's embarrassing, because the body really should have been eternal and had his neshama function properly, so then he certainly would have been eternal. The fact is that now it's not eternal, but it's still something which belongs to him, right? Something which actually he had affinity to. In fact, the Mekubalim say, the Kabbalists say that there's always some connection, even after death, between a person and his body. Right? It's a very tenuous connection. Not the same connection which exists during the lifetime, but there's still that connection. And therefore, when a person perceives what he should have been, the holy receptacle for his soul, being degraded in such a way, it's very, very painful for him. Again, not painful physically, but painful spiritually. So this pain and shame is very similar to the pain and shame which we understand Gehenna to be, right? It's the same idea, that when somebody undergoes this pain and shame of seeing his body disintegrating, then that's similar to the pain and shame a person feels when he realizes how he wasted his life or committed this, that, or the other sin. So therefore, these two types of affliction are linked to each other. Is that clear in any way?
Yeah.
So then, again, everything ultimately reverts to shame. And that's what Mullah Hashem is saying to Adam here. The truth is the emphasis is not on death in this pasuk. Death is almost peripheral here. The emphasis is that you have to disintegrate in some way, shape, or form. Why? Because obviously this dirt makeup which you have has caused you to fail. You must detect. And therefore, we can't have you forever connected. You have to disintegrate at some point in time. And only after that disintegration occurs, then we can work with you again. But first you have to be brought down into the ground and disintegrate there down in the ground. Now, the only way to understand this, of course, is in a mystical way. You can't approach this rationally, because if you think of this rationally, what does it mean? Just because we start rotting, it's better for you. It's really difficult to understand. But you have to understand on a mystical level that the body which Hashem gives to us is supposed to be, I don't know exactly how, nobody knows exactly how, but it's supposed to reflect divinity. It's a Tzelem Elohim. A person reflects divinity in his body. So therefore, it was a terrible thing for this thing which should have represented divinity to actually disintegrate. The reason why it had to disintegrate is because it was abused, it was misused. But really, it should not have to do a gun to go back. So what Hashem is telling Adam here is, you know what, you did so miserable, you did so badly, so poorly, that therefore the body which I have given you, which was a pure and refined and elevated thing, you brought it down to the level from which it came. And therefore it has to go back completely, and we have to start again from scratch, which ultimately happens with the resurrection. Yeah.
I was going to say, when we see other times in the Chumash, when Hashem says, like when Joseph said to, Israel said to Joseph, I'm going to die, I shall die, effectively, right? Do we understand that the sensing then is the only way for atonement after that culmination of all events is through death, is through this process that you're talking about? Because he's on a level of prophecy, so he may... My question is,
The rabbi in Bracha, the rabbi in Bracha, there are many, many types of death. And the easiest type of death is like this death which Moshe and Aaron underwent in the desert, which was a very... hard to use the word pleasant, but it wasn't such a bad experience. And they liken that to when you have a thread with it in milk, and you pull the thread out of the milk, it's a very, smooth process. You know, like you have the hair which comes to your cup of milk, you take it out, it's a smooth process, not fermented. They say the worst type of death is when the person obviously is supposed to suffer a great deal. But not just physical suffering, we mean spiritual suffering. And the torment of that would be similar, or rather the analogy they give for that, is if you have a piece of wool or fabric which is stuck on a hook, and it's very, very, very much stuck, and you've got to pull the hook out of the fabric, right? And it's very wrenching, and it's very difficult, and there's a lot of damage which occurs as a result. So that's how it happens when a rasha, when a person who is evil, dies. So death is relative to the person that it's not the first choice. But for a person who's already made himself holy during his lifetime, so death is just a continuation, right? Because this is the way we were headed anyway. It could be had Adam not sinned, and had I not sinned, I wouldn't have had to die, but at least I've done, as much as I can, and therefore death is not so bad. Whereas a person whose entire focus has been to make himself more part of the dirt and more part of the soil, so that person, when they come to take his neshama away from him, the neshama is way down there, right? He's going to put it down as slowly as he possibly goes, good. And now we're going to pull it out of him. It's a much more difficult experience.
Are you saying that if a person has an easy death, he was a holy person, that the person has a difficult death, he was not a holy person?
Yeah. That's spiritually, not physically.
That's after your
death. At the moment he's dying, not what happens before
he dies. We don't, and that's the only thing with the illness which precedes death. That has to do with that point at which the soul passes from this world to the next world.
Yeah.
Not the, a person who can undergo a lot of torment and be a righteous person. That might even make him more righteous. But the idea is, does the soul resist and have to be pulled out, or does the soul go willingly because that's where it wants to be, right? So that's the difference between the two, and it has nothing to do with how debilitating the dying process was.
So if it exists, that means the person is more of a rush. If the person, or if the soul, the shama is very smooth, then, you know, it doesn't have to spend so much time, you know, in order to cleanse the lane.
Right. That's why they say that when a person dies, so right before he dies, he's exposed to the lama soyan, to the higher world, to the higher realms, you know. Like they say in the near-death experiences, you see this great light and whatever else happens. So a person's exposed to all that. So then, if you're a good guy, so then, this looks great, let me go there, right? Something with which you have affinity. But if you're a bad guy, so then this stands in direct contradiction to everything you've done in your life. It's quite embarrassing. And naturally, your response will be to draw back and try and avoid the inevitable at that point. That's why there's the difference in the way the Chazal look at the death, which one is, you know, easier, which one's more difficult.
So is that kind of like, you know, I was going to say, like, what is our relationship with why animals have to be slaughtered a certain way? With the death of an animal, is that a similar
parallel
to death of an animal?
Then? Well, the way they explain that is that if an animal's death would be too agonizing, so then that would somehow impact the flesh which you eat and make it somehow very, you know, have a negative impact. And so that's why you want there to be as smooth a death as possible for the animal.
Okay.
Because
that kind of like what you were saying before, just a couple of seconds ago. Somebody who, like when they come out, like people come out of the movie theater, you know, and some people, well, like when you go into the movie theater, you know, it's all dark and you really can't see, but there are other people who, like, have been in the movie theater for a while, you know, and they're not really afraid of the dark and they come out into the light and, you know, it's not as, they're not as sensitive, like, some people, okay, like the great Sadiqim maybe aren't quite as sensitive, you know, to the light, like when they walk out, where other people are afraid of the light, you know, so they want to try and avoid the light. I think Rabbi Mendelowitz was talking earlier this morning about, you know, like that he, you know, enjoys like the warmth and the sun. There are some people, like when the sun comes in, they're always down the shade and, you know, they don't want to go near the light.
Right, so before we finish, I want to stress again. So this book is not really so much about them, right? Death, Adam will die, but that's not the stress here. The stress here is because of your being drawn, your body having been drawing you down and pulling you down toward the earth, so therefore the body has to disintegrate after death and we have to start again from scratch. In other words, there has to be Olam Hazeh, this world can't be the ultimate world. There has to be Olam Haba. Had man not sinned, there would have been all of my fault. This would have been the world. But since man sinned, so therefore, this all of my sin must come to an end at some point, and there has to be an all of my fault where everything is recreated and made according to a more perfect level.
Sure.
A quick question of the meaning of life. In the